Welcome, welcome, welcome to the World Bank EdTech Podcast, a conversation on the use of technology and innovation in education globally. My name is Cristóbal Cobo. I'm a senior education technology specialist, and I'm delighted to give you the welcome to this new episode. Today, we aim to explore the complexities of teaching digital skills and 21st century skills in emerging markets. We will delve in how technology can redefine traditional classroom boundaries, its potential to enhance students' engagement and learning outcomes. We will discuss the importance of digital and data literacies, along with computational thinking in preparing students for the future. In today's show, we have Taylor Shihabong, the president and co-founder of Code.x, and Arnon Eskovich, associate professor at the Tel Aviv University's Mathematics, Science and Technology Education Department, School of Education. So to both of you, a very warm welcome.
Thank you, Cristóbal. It's exciting to be here.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
So we can start diving into the conversation. Why don't we start with Arnon? What are, based on your experience, the main challenges in shifting from knowledge-based to a skills-based approach to education, and how this can be addressed?
All right. So first of all, there is a scale between skill-oriented education and knowledge-oriented education. The latter is the more traditional one. The former is the more advanced one. And we should understand where on the scale we should be. So the first challenge is to situate ourselves as educators, as policymakers, on that scale. Where do we want to be? Which skills are most important for us? Creativity or collaboration or problem solving or communication or language. There is a long list of skills that are relevant for today's society. And then the second challenge is, of course, how to teach these skills. There is a misconception that some skills are already acquired by everybody in today's young generation, right? Everybody has digital skills. Everybody can be creative, or to the opposite, no one can be creative unless they were born like that. So we should break this misconception and understand that not everybody on the young generation is digitally literate. Creativity can be acquired. So these misconceptions should be reconsidered. And then eventually we have to practically teach these skills, which brings again a tension between teaching them separately, like a topic, right? We will have a creativity class, or teaching them within the disciplines. So we can teach collaboration in biology classes or creativity in English classes, etc. What we know from vast research in the literature is that skills should be better taught within the disciplines with a clear context. However, it's hard for students to transfer them, to generalize them. So we have to repeat this teaching process in different contexts, in different disciplines.
Brilliant. And I think that's a perfect segue for the connection with Code.x, which I think has really, really interesting experiences. So, Taylor, could you explain us a little bit what is Code.x's role and also your approach to teaching digital skills to use, particularly in conflict-affected areas?
Of course. And I just wanted to say the previous answer about this misconception about youth having automatic tech literacy and digital skills really resonated with what we see here at Code.x. In particular, being exposed to technology and digital skills is quite different from practicing digital skills and actually being a creator in the digital world. So that's something that we are quite focused on here at Code.x. Just to back up a bit, we're an international youth organization. We focus on providing accessible technology and human-centered design education to youth with a particular focus in fragile and conflict-affected regions. So when I say we provide accessible tech education, we do it directly from Silicon Valley through our instructor network of practicing designers and technologists. And this is always in partnership with international and local organizations. We find that these partners provide really crucial situational context and direction for each of our operating regions. The reason why we take this role, there's a huge blocker from our partners' perspectives, which is a lack of local access to innovation insights due to being several layers removed from Silicon Valley, plus a lack of local educators that can teach from this perspective. So the government and nonprofit partners that come to us really recognize that knowledge-based education is not enough. For example, in one of our partner countries, local university students weren't getting jobs due to the country's educational landscape kind of over-indexing on technical knowledge without any real-world practice. This was really tough for people who were trying to become junior engineers. And in that sense, they recognize that there's a need for skills-based education, especially because technical skills are often a very easy, cheap way out of poverty, particularly compared to other types of skills or industries which might require more resources right off the bat. And then on the US side of things, there's this huge untapped pool of volunteer energy. And this is particularly with education-minded tech workers that are searching for ways to volunteer their time and also use technical skills that they've spent years kind of cultivating and growing professionally. So Code.x is really one of the few international outlets for technology experts to get directly involved and for conflict regions to have access to this type of mentorship, skills training, and connections to innovators. When talking specifically about our approach to teaching digital skills, especially because we focus on youth in conflict regions, we really go back to our theory of change, which is that building a robust technology ecosystem requires a long-term investment in exceptional student talent. And we want to expose that talent and local educators to industry best practices with the hopes that they will spread those skills from within through the future. We invest in a small number of extremely excited, extremely invested students, the most passionate students that you can find in a region, versus just investing a bit of energy in a large quantity of students, like what you might see in massive online open courses or other types of technology programming. And these programs for fragile and conflict-affected regions really emphasize changing local mindsets to empower students as change agents. So we integrate computer science, human-centered design, and cultural exposure, and our students really strengthen their resiliency and leadership qualities by building their own community solutions, growing into young entrepreneurs. So just to wrap this up, when we're talking about why does Code.x take this approach, in a lot of the countries that we operate in, there are a lot of sector challenges that are kind of present across many of the Global South countries that we see, such as just lack of local technology career interests and lack of associated prestige. Like many of the places we work in, the students value being doctors or engineers over investing in technology and in digital skills. There's also a low quality of technical education and focus on rote memorization in the local school system, national brain drain, lack of access and equity, really a whole host of problems that kind of crop up across many different countries that share this profile. And we see so many brilliant but low access students not having reliable ways to get this education and to engage with skills-based learning in the way that they're excited about. So for many of the students that we bring in, this is the first positive or meaningful educational experience that they've ever had. One of the first exercises that we ask them to do is tell me about your school. Tell me what education means to you. And it's come up time and time again that so many of our students can't name a single teacher that has stuck out to them or that they felt inspired by. And through this exercise, we help them create the classroom of their dreams, which gets them so excited about non-traditional learning and the type of blended experience that Arnon was just talking about. One story that in particular really sticks out to me is from one of the first instructors that we ever brought to one of our programs. And they said the first time that they taught computer science to a classroom of highly motivated, engaged young students, they were surprised that they were just trying to memorize the code. And anybody who's ever coded or engaged with technical education before knows that you can't simply memorize code. You need to be able to produce and create it, which kind of goes back to not just being exposed to something, but also practicing it. And that's because rote memorization is often how students are taught to succeed. But the digital skills that we're talking about really require problem solving and creativity, which require new ways of learning as well. So just really great to work with students that are so excited and can recognize the value of what this close mentorship provides. And that's the role that Code.x takes in the education that they seek.
That's brilliant, Taylor. Thank you so much. You know, I can hardly memorize my phone number and forget about the coding. So I really like the example that you share. You mentioned the importance of going cross-boundary and also widening opportunities. That's a very good connection with the following question that I have for Arnon. How can technology be used to blur the boundaries between time, space, and communities in traditional education systems, just as we heard from this fascinating example?
Yeah, so I think it's schools still operate in a very traditional ways all over the world. And it seems that students are being educated in silos, in physical silos in the school and within the school in classrooms. They are educated in silos of time, right? The school day is divided into clear subparts of lessons, strict time limitations. Schools are limited by the very community in which they operate, and in a very siloed way regarding pedagogies. Each of these dimensions can be helped by technology in order to advance teaching and create more engaging learning experience, just like we heard from Taylor. So space and time boundaries are sort of the easiest to think of. And we all experienced learning and teaching during the pandemic. And we know today that space and time are not strict limits that we should keep. I'm not saying, of course, that schools should vanish and we all should go online. No, but we have a basket of opportunities that we can choose from. We can mix online learning with physical learning, synchronous learning with asynchronous learning. And technology can also help us improve our pedagogies. We can go into project-based learning, game-based learning, coding, of course, in many disciplines, not just coding for the purpose of coding. And technology can also help us extend our communities of learners. We can much more easily today get students to interact in real time, even with other students, with experts around the world, with other players within their own communities. The main idea is to understand that it's not just about either being in the classroom or going fully online. There is a host of opportunities that we should explore, and most importantly, we should use as part of our agenda to promote some educational values to get the kids to achieve some goals.
Okay, that's great. So it doesn't sound like it's a technology issue. It's more a mindset change in the culture, how we approach and use these opportunities. Would that be a fair approach?
I think yes, because for me, the overarching goal of education is to achieve something that educators should set up as a goal. And once this goal is set up, we should see how we use all of our resources, physical and digital and humane and object-related, to achieve this goal.
Wonderful. So let's get back to Taylor and let's pick up a little bit of her experience working globally. We are hearing all these opportunities of blending boundaries and contexts in education. What is the potential for triggering and motivating student engagement to have them more motivated and overall improve the learning outcomes? Either could be cognitive outcomes, but it could be other social emotional capacities. Can you explain us a little bit how to create these new opportunities for young people? I'm sure a lot of people listening to this podcast would love to learn from you.
Yeah, I can think of a couple of new opportunities that this creates for young people. The one that certainly sticks out the most is the empowerment and agency aspect of putting education into the hands of the student themselves by blurring boundaries through technology. So when we think about having ownership over your own learning journey, what does that really mean? It might mean I get to explore my own interests. I get to pursue projects that I'm truly interested in and care about, or I get to use technology that I've seen my friends use, that I've seen online, and I'm really curious about getting my hands on. And this is to express my ideas. It's to contribute to communities that I care about and learn next to people that I'm interested in. So this type of empowerment through technology really cultivates personal agency, which is great at a young age, creativity, because you're kind of blending many different tools and mediums together to create something that is totally tailored to you, and a sense of purpose, because, you know, this might be the first time that learners have the capacity to self-create their own academic experiences. One example that comes to mind, we had one student in Albania where we teach interdisciplinary coding and design education. And this student was involved in the program for 24 months. They were mentored directly by our instructors from Silicon Valley and kind of handheld through engaging with technology in a way that was most interesting to them. So in this case, it was gaming and AR applications. And luckily, we had an instructor as part of the cohort who was working in the AR industry. So they kind of mentored this student one-on-one. And as of last year, that student received funding for their own AR startup, which is really incredible when you think about how old they are. I mean, the student was only 18. They're entering university right now. And this is a theme that we see time and time again with some of our students, that being able to feel empowered about your learning experience and take agency over what you're learning and what you're creating creates opportunities for you to stand out and seize other opportunities that will come along the way, like standing out to top schools. We've had students get into universities like MIT, Stanford, Brown, because they're able to use blended education and technology to do things that are outside of the norm. When you take something that you care a lot about, you're able to pursue it and you do really well. And we've seen local acknowledgement of these changes as well. So these students are bringing that back to their communities and they're creating projects, apps, different solutions that people around them can use. And I think that's why Code.x has received so much interest over the years, because this kind of enthusiasm does propagate outward. And other students who see that want in, and other educators who see that also want in. Some other benefits I can think of, global community, that's more accessible now than it ever has been before. Students have more visibility than ever into the educational landscapes of other countries, which I think is fascinating when you're growing up, you know, to be able to compare and contrast what you're learning and what you're really experiencing with that of other students. When I was going through school, I certainly didn't have that kind of insight. And this is something that Code.x is quite attuned to as well. So for example, during the pandemic, we, like so many other organizations, were forced to take our programs online. But this was actually somewhat of an advantage to us because we could host cultural exchange events between our students for the first time. So we have programs in countries around the world from many different cultures, and students were kind of talking to each other to see how they can learn from each other's analogous experiences. Something that we really emphasize for our instructors is that students would enter often without seeing the value of participating in a program like this or in pursuing digital skills or technology literacy. Sometimes it's just not on their radar, but we routinely see that by the time they graduate from one of our educational programs, students will report that these are the skills that they use the most in everyday life and across their education. I love that we can foster more engagement, we can foster motivation and personalized learning with students. We can create global connections for them, which helps them to develop essential skills faster. And overall, students are equipped with the tools and resources to navigate in this increasingly interconnected and difficult digital world. We see that our students can now see themselves as a crucial part of a solution rather than a learner that is simply existing in a much larger schooling environment. They're taking an active, hands-on approach to discovering new things that are within their interests and problem solving how to apply them elsewhere using a combination of tools, technologies, mediums across time and space, like Arnon said, in a way that is best for them.
That's very interesting, Taylor, because it echoes the quite old notion by now, however not practiced so far in the education realm, that in education, computers are not just something to learn from, but something to learn with. This is an important notion that we learned from Seymour Papert back in the early 1980s. And later we came to understand that through the engagement with computers or digital artifacts, students can manifest their own ideas. They can give their own perspective on the world. So programming is not just about solving mathematical computational problems. It can be often as a means to reflect upon the world, right? In so many ways. So I think this is a very, very important idea.
I loved it as well. Thank you for that approach. I think the idea of underscoring agency, sense of purpose, and being part of the solution and being passionate about? I mean, that question doesn't come that often for the students, right? What are you passionate about? Usually the question is, how do you perform in the scores, right? And many teachers want to move in this direction, but they have a very prescriptive plan, one too many lessons, and finding those boundaries are important.
Yeah, I just have another story for you if you're not too tired of my stories.
We love your story.
Thank you. What you just said really reminded me of one of our teaching assistants from one of the first years of our program. So this particular person joined us because they wanted to get more experience with technology and with their own digital skills. They were a computer science graduate. They wanted to meet other instructors that were from the US that had worked in Silicon Valley because they weren't quite sure how to turn their degree experience into a job, but were generally interested in technology. And this person actually returned with us to teach several times with the students, and over time realized that they loved the application of technology in education, and they absolutely loved seeing the type of transformation that students had in the classroom from being completely brand new to technology, to design, to entrepreneurship, and this transformation as they start to gain self-confidence, as they start to learn how to advocate for themselves and the type of educational experience that they want. And not only did this teaching assistant work with us for many years and contribute greatly to the student experience, but they now run an education nonprofit themselves because they saw the importance of problem solving and certain technical skills that the students were learning and also really lacking from the same educational landscape that they had grown up in. And now they've created a solution for that. And they're working on alternative educational methods for students to learn how to be better problem solvers and to tackle problem solving kind of on the international level through competing in different competitions. It's just really incredible seeing what somebody can do when they're inspired not only by technology, but also by, you know, opportunities that open up when you can use technology and when you have something specific that you want to apply it towards.
That's brilliant. And I love that we have talked about the relevance of the cross-cutting 21st century. Now let's move a little bit to other kind of, I would like to call them superpowers. So let me ask you, Arnon, about some of the most relevant and most often mentioned superpowers. What role do you think that digital literacy, data literacy, and computational thinking play in preparing students for the future of work?
Well, personally, I think that we cannot navigate today's world without these literacies. So digital literacies are the basic. It's how we communicate with digital artifacts. It's how we use wisely, effectively, what's all around us, right? It's not just our computers and our phones. We have printers and refrigerators and cars and registers in the supermarket. So we have to have this very basic digital literacies. And then we live in a world where we are flooded with data all around us in every sense of everything that we do. So we have to navigate this data-rich world. We have to understand, where did the data come from? Is it biased? Is it true? How can we analyze data from various sources? It may help us in very mundane tasks like balancing our account or consuming news. And then there's computational thinking, which I perceive as the conceptual foundations for solving complex problems effectively and efficiently. And today, many of the everyday problems are kind of complex, even if we have to fix home appliance, not to mention to think about careers. How do we think about this path? This is a very complex problem. And this way of thinking is derived from the digital world and from computers. When we face a complex problem, we should ask ourselves, what is its essence? There is lots of noise around, but we should take care of the very essence. We should, or we could, divide it into a few smaller, more manageable, more digestible problems, and then take care of each of them. And then we face all kinds of errors in our solution problem, and we should fix them, which we call debugging from the computer realm, but we debug everyday actions. So I think digital literacies and data literacies and computational thinking are helpful tools for our everyday actions in today's digitally saturated world.
And we haven't even talked about AI literacy, which is large enough for a whole new chapter. I really love your approach. Thank you for that. Let me get back to Taylor. So, Taylor, based on the work and the routes that you have navigated, what is your call to action? How organizations like yours can expand, especially in regions with limited resources or ongoing conflicts?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think particularly when it comes to providing accessible and equitable education, it's so crucial to prioritize local voices and local decision makers to support with any ongoing needs assessments and educational gaps. We've seen time and time again, yes, online education providers exist and their technical classes are good, but they're really not tailored at all to unique real-world circumstances that students in fragile or conflict-affected regions are in. Like, example, let's say you're a Code.x student, you're taking a completely asynchronous class with a capstone about designing a new ride for Disneyland that isn't as relevant as, let's say, an item swap solution for mothers in my local area. And many students do reach out to us for tips on further seeking skills-based learning because current courses or opportunities simply don't resonate with some of their realities. So we really do want to prioritize those voices and the decision makers around them. Second, I think, is to provide several tiers of educational support. So I've talked a lot about in-depth education, where we kind of take a small, highly skilled group of students and really invest in them so that they can propagate educational changes outward with their peers and like multiply the amount of impact that you might have. But I also do think there's a place for quick, accessible, low barrier to entry education, like let's say workshop-based formats or one-off seminars that students can attend just to dip their toes into the water and start to test out different skills that are tailored to their local context. And then finally, support for students that are interested in other types of industries. Arnon had mentioned not just the ability to do technical work, but also have general technical literacy and digital literacy. It is so important that even students who are not planning on becoming technologists, they should also understand how to navigate technology. I mean, I know we don't want to get into AI policy right now, but I think that's a great example of needing to understand what's happening around you and being able to critically assess it, no matter what kind of industry you're in or what kind of job you have. I think the biggest takeaway that I want out of this is not relying on remote education alone or technology-based education alone, because we see this as just one piece in a very large, very complex educational toolkit. I think it's great that technology is a scalable and often lower cost way to provide education, especially in the short term or in rounding out otherwise poor quality education that's available locally. But we know that students improve greatly from positive role models and experiential, hands-on, tailored learning. And in order to truly capacity build, they need to concentrate on applying their skill sets to directly support their own communities. When I go out and I talk to people in the ed tech space, I can see this push to invest billions of dollars in ed tech. There's this huge focus and excitement around remote first, highly scalable, access from anywhere education. And I think that's useful. And that certainly has a place. But human connection is still a central pillar of education. Our team saw this during the pandemic years. Yes, students gained skills. They're quite proficient in what we wanted them to learn, but there was much less motivation. There was less engagement and an overall lowered understanding of how to apply their course material to their own lives because they weren't going out and practicing. Like there wasn't this true blend of educational modes that Arnon and I are kind of championing during this episode. So I do believe EdTech is incredible, but can't do it alone, especially in serving as an inspiration and a North Star for younger students, which is why, you know, our team is involved to provide not only the technological aspect of things, but also a mentor that can kind of guide you through the understanding, the analyzing, and the use of new technologies, particularly in regions with limited resources or ongoing conflict, with super specific, really difficult to tackle problems that only they truly have the context and innate understanding for. we don't want them to just learn technical skills. We want them to learn skills, apply those skills, be able to critically analyze those skills, and spread their fire and enthusiasm for learning this type of literacy to others. In other words, become the teacher that they wish that they had had and help bring digital literacy and technological literacy to their region or country as a whole.
Wow, that's remarkable. I think there are so many important ideas from this conversation. Critical messages, you guys have mentioned that tech-based education alone is not enough. It's really, really important to break down boundaries like time, space, disciplines. At the same time, technology is the interface that we use today to interact with the world. So therefore, data literacy, digital literacy, computation thinking are critical languages cross-cutting for everybody to some extent, but none of those elements will be relevant if passion, sense of ownership, and sense of purpose, as Taylor mentioned at the end, spread the fire. Technology alone won't be producing the magic if people are not engaged with that. So thank you so much for your time, for the brilliant ideas that you have shared, and we really look forward to have you again in this show.
Thank you so much, Christopher. It was very interesting.
Yes, thanks for inviting me as well. I had such a great time participating in this discussion, and I'm really excited to explore these ideas in the future.